Soccer Talk Podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 86, we discuss NBC scoring its most watched Premier League game of the season so far, Fubo TV adding a major network that many soccer fans will love, the latest news on the Scottish Premiership rights, and we have a bunch of letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and I'm joined this week by a guest co-host, and that's the one and only Mark Donaldson from ESPN. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
Fantastic. So for the veteran listeners out there, I think everybody knows who Mark Donaldson is. For the newer listeners, the fans into soccer that have maybe come in on the World Cup, Mark's been with ESPN for, I think, 8 years, covering many of the biggest games. And this season, I mean, on top of, I'm sure, many other tasks, Mark, this season, Serie A, which we're really excited about, and looking ahead to this weekend's game with Juventus and the home match, a question for you, Mark. I'm sure the atmosphere in Turin for this in the stadium is going to be magnificent. How much does that come into your mind in terms of knowing how, whether it's let the game breathe a little bit more, or how to really kind of capture and convey that passion and noise from the crowd for what should be a massive match?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's a privilege to be asked by ESPN to do the Serie A commentaries. We'll see where it leads, but certainly in the foreseeable future, it's a league that I don't think people realise has the following it has until you're immersed in it. It's got a big following in this country, and there'll be a lot of eyes on ESPN2 this weekend for Ronaldo's home debut as well. It's a good question, because you've got to balance the circumstances as well, and you can't go into a game saying, I'm going to let this breathe more, because it depends on what happens. It is a big game. There's a lot of people who want to see how Ronaldo gets on in his first game as well. For me, my preparation doesn't really change too much as far as that's concerned. There'll be a thorough preparation. There'll be extra emphasis on specific Ronaldo stats. But just because I've got them, Chris, doesn't necessarily mean to say I'll have to use them.
That's true. You can always kind of keep them up your shirt sleeve, and if need be, pull them out. But yeah, that's a good way in many ways, in terms of letting the game unfold and then seeing which way it goes. I'm sure, you mean, a lot of people kind of go into a game thinking one thing, and then all of a sudden, with the first couple of minutes, you mean, whether it's a sending off or something else, you mean, the opposition scores, and that changes the whole atmosphere of the stadium and changes the game completely.
It does. And I mean, Juventus got 3 goals last week. Ronaldo didn't score. Is there any extra pressure on him? Well, he won't think there is. That's for other people to decide. As far as the kind of commentary is concerned, the kind of analogy I would use is that we're a bit like the referee. A commentator's kind of necessary for TV football, but we're not the story. We're not the star. Never will be. Shouldn't be. So it's not about what's said. If we say the wrong thing, then that can lead to headlines. But it's all about Ronaldo. It's all about Juventus. It's all about Serie A. It's all about our property. We've got it now on a 3-year deal. And to an extent as well, at the right time, it's about promoting the brand that we have, which is ESPN and ESPN Plus. Because, as you well know, the Serie A, every game is going to be available on ESPN Plus. So it's all about letting the game be the star. We've got things we need to do, but most importantly, if you're tuning into that game, you're tuning in to see the football, to watch Ronaldo, and we've got to be aware of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, so big match this weekend, Juventus against Lazio on ESPN2, I believe.
Yeah,
that's right.
It is.
So from this past week, so actually for listeners who are wondering, Kartik's on vacation. He's in London right now as we speak. So thanks to Mark for subbing in. But we got a super sub this week. And looking at this past week in terms of what we've been watching, I'll kick it off. The thing that stood out for me the most was Bleacher Report, their coverage of the Champions League qualification playoffs. And it's amazing. So I missed Tuesday's match, which was the the Benfica match, but I did catch Wednesday's game, which was Ajax against Kiev. And it's incredible for me to consider that this is basically Turner Sports' only their second week of soccer coverage. I think back in the 1990 they did the World Cup, but really in the modern day, this is really the first couple of weeks of soccer coverage. And within the first 2 weeks, their coverage is better than Fox had had for when they had 8 years of the UEFA Champions League coverage. The set is a beautifully designed. It's kind of very kind of gritty. It's a different type of set design. They had the link up between two different studios, so they had Steve Nash and Stuart Holden in the studio in Los Angeles on a big, massive monitor. And then you had Tim Howard, Kate Abdo, and then a new person to the set, and that's Owen Hargreaves. And for a lot of the listeners who have seen him on, whether it's BT Sport or listening to his co-commentary, somebody that knows the game very well, is very intelligent about the game and good analysis. So I'm loving the design of the studio. I'm liking the link up between the Atlanta and Los Angeles studios. The analysis is good. And they're having a lot of fun, too, because even if anyone who watched Wednesday's match between Ajax and Kiev, the post-match, we had Stuart Holden and Steve Nash having a kickabout on set, kind of just showing kind of their skills and talking about street football. They had a segment about street football that had one of the reporters going into Amsterdam and interviewing these street footballers, and where they were talking about that they believe that street football originated from Holland. So, and Amsterdam specifically. So all in all, quite a different type of theme and feel to Bleacher Report and Turner Sports on TNT. But so far, I enjoy it. Any Mark, did you catch any of the coverage in the last couple of weeks? And what's been your initial thoughts in terms of what they've been up to?
Yeah, it's kind of difficult. I mean, obviously, when Kartik does this, Kartik has so many streams that he can watch, so many things that he can watch as well. A lot of the time, when we do this, we're on air at the same time, or we're doing something else at the same time. So I haven't actually seen their coverage as yet. It's funny coming at this from a commentary perspective, because over the summer and the last few months, prior to an announcement being made as to what Turner were going to do, there was a lot of interest in the kind of commentary community as to, well, this, as you mentioned, this is someone that's not had it for a while. What are their plans? Are they going to be doing it on site? That was one of the things we heard originally, that it would come from Europe and it would be done kind of predominantly from there. That hasn't happened. So I'm intrigued to see how it goes. Obviously, I know Stuart Holden well. He's beaten me at poker on many occasions, unfortunately. but he's an excellent broadcaster. We saw that during the World Cup. Interesting that they've had Steve Nash, because Steve knows his football as well. There's the tie-in there. I mean, Stuart Holden's obviously friends with Landon Donovan, and they know Steve Nash through the LA scene as well. Kate Abdo is a wonderful broadcaster, multilingual, multi-talented, and can kind of throw her her hat in the ring for anything and still be excellent at what she does. So it's interesting as well, because, again, purely from a commentary perspective, a lot of people were thinking, who are they going to go? Who are they going to get? And I believe, Chris, they're pretty much using WorldFeed for everything. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So far for the Ajax-Kiev game, we had Martin Tyler and Stuart Robson. I think the other matches too, all the world feed. I think it was Tony Jones for one of them. But and actually, I like that. I mean, to me, it's like you're not messing with the broadcast. You're just going with some of the best commentators out there. And then you focus on the studio coverage. And that's really kind of where you add your little bit of kind of salt or a little bit of cumin, just to kind of a little bit of sugar, just to kind of pull people in and keep them hooked.
Yeah, I mean it's similar in a way, minus the studio shows, as to what we've done for Serie A, in that we host, but we do one game a week. Everything else is world feed. But even then, they don't even have their own commentary team that are doing the Champions League games, and they've gone totally world feed, and that'll be something. I mean, with the productions that each cup league is doing, for example, Premier League productions, you've got a full outfit. So it's basically a package that's already there for the broadcaster. Mm-hmm. And you've got enough things to worry about. We got the Italian League like less than a week before it went on air. So there's production values, which, I mean, behind the scenes, it's crazy what needs to happen just to put something on air. So if you know from the broadcaster perspective that you're getting a bundle, you're getting a package, you can see how that goes. You can already take that package, and then at a later date, you can add. And maybe that's what Turner and Bleacher Report will do. At a later date, they'll add their own, if that's what they want. But it's interesting you're talking as well about having boots on the ground with their reporter at the stadium or in Europe. That's a nice touch.
Yeah, especially inside the stadium. Like for the Ajax match, he was like right in front of where the ultras were, and you had the ultras in the background just going crazy, you mean loud as ever. I mean, Ajax supporters are some of the best supporters in the world, and he's right there. He's right. He's not in a commentary booth. He's not on a sideline reporter by the halfway line, kind of where it's usually, you know, in kind of. The prawn sandwich brigade. I mean, he's right in the thick of things. So, yeah, so far so good. So from the past week, Mark, anything that stood out for you? Some of the matches you watched, anything of interest that you saw?
Yeah, I mean, going without kind of flogging a dead horse with regards to Serie A, IMG are producing some games. As well as, I think, Performer doing some. So what we had, our opening game was Chievo against Juventus. So Steve Banyard and Tony DiRigo did that one. Now, a lot of the world feed over the last few years has featured the likes of Richard Whittle and Paul Visca. Now, Richard did Atalanta against Frosinone on Monday. But the addition of Steve and Tony to do Chievo-Juventus, and then Jim Proudfoot and Gary Bertels did Lazio-Napoli as well. I think that's a nice touch. You've got the two doing it, and both are kind of well-known. And by the way, Jim Proudfoot's got to be the hardest-working commentator out there, because he did Spurs-Fulham and then raced IMG to do Lazio against Napoli with Gary.
That's true. And he's often done Talk Sport radio commentaries, too, so on top of things. So it's, and it's a smart strategy, because you're taking familiar voices. A lot of them you've heard, I mean, listeners have heard on Premier League matches. You switch on, I mean, Chievo Verona against Juventus, and then you hear this familiar voices again, and it's like, okay, this sounds good.
Yeah.
I mean, someone I can relate to, I know them, and you might watch the game a little bit more than, say, two total strangers that you've never heard before.
Yeah, again, it's just the familiar voice in your living room, which you like. One of the other things that I noticed as well, the Bundesliga and the DFB Pokal, it was the cup first round last week. I was doing bridges for Drochter St. Assel against Bayern Munich. And it was nice that Phil Bonney and Sean Dundee were doing that game. Derek Ray, our friend, was involved as well, doing matches. But they gave the first round of the DFB Pokal just as much clout as a normal Bundesliga weekend. It was just like a continuation. So for me, I love that, because there's so many stories. The game that I was doing, Drochter St. Assel against Bayern, this is two villages that merged. Their stadiums, 3,000 of a capacity. But they had so many temporary seats, it took up to 7,500. And then you've got the game itself, which Bayern had loads of possession, but only won by a goal to nil. So it was nice that the Bundesliga World Feed Productions showed the same kind of due deference to the German Cup first round as they would to a normal Bundesliga production.
Yeah, and that's good to hear too. In terms of Phil Bonney, who's been around a long time. I mean, again, and a very familiar voice for those who have watched Bundesliga over the years. Derek Ray, of course, one of the best. And yeah, that's great news. In terms, I missed the matches myself, but that's great news that they're providing excellent commentary. And that's something, to be honest, we miss sometimes. I mean, nothing against the Fox commentators, but when we do have the Fox commentary from the US, sometimes we're missing that world feed from the Bundesliga. So whether it's Phil or others, but then again, I mean, the Fox commentary from Keith Costigan is all well and good, and so there's no issue there, but it is something we miss out on sometimes.
Yeah, the secret for a commentator is to keep the listener guessing, are they at the stadium or are they not? And I know that the Bundesliga do have on-site commentary from time to time, usually either one a week or one every 2 weeks. Either Richard or Paul, I don't know them, I've obviously heard them very often. I think being based in Italy, they do a few from the stadium as well. It's just nice when you don't want to make it too obvious. And the key, certainly for me, is I'm not saying to someone I'm there when I'm not. But on the other hand, if I'm at the stadium, I'm not making it overly obvious because you're just rubbing it in. For me, when you're at the stadium on a rare occasion, it just shows and emphasizes every other week when you're not at the stadium. And you can tell the difference sometimes. So it's not something go here at as opposed to there. You just don't want to mention that you're there when you're not, because that can cause too many issues, especially when you get this is an interesting thing. We've had a couple of issues from a broadcasting perspective with VAR. Jim Proudfoot had it in his game on the Saturday. We had it in the Torino against Roma game, myself and Matteo Bonetti, on Sunday, in that there has been an incident which has been looked at, but the replay has not made it obvious either to us watching on a monitor or to the people watching it everywhere as to what exactly has happened. Mm. Now, a lot of the time we use the graphics from site as well, and when they don't change for a goal, I had it with Atletico Madrid against Inter in the ICC in the Metropolitano, when a goal was chalked off, and because the whistles of the crowd rather than what we saw on the monitor, because we get exactly the same as the viewers back home. So that the introduction of VAR is all well and good, but it will take a bit of time for commentaries and for the producers, the on-site producers, to be on the same page, so we see and we know what's going on, and we don't have to kind of paddle around in the hope that we'll get this soon, because the listeners need to know straight away what's going on, and the viewers need to know straight away.
Yeah, that's a good point too, because an example of that done poorly was last season's FA Cup matches and League Cup matches that had kind of VAR trials, and there was confusion among everyone. I mean, the commentators got confused, but then again too, I'm sure they're going off the same visuals that we're seeing.
Yeah.
And then the opposite of that is the World Cup in terms of the production of that, and it seemed that everyone was on the same page on that, and that made things a lot easier for the viewer too. There's less confusion. And if the commentator is confused, that makes the listener twice as confused.
Exactly. Just a couple of things as well. Wednesday night, I was actually at the stadium for NYCFC against the Red Bulls. That was a Fox Sports 1 game. Mark Folwell and Dan Kennedy with that one. Nearly 30,000 at Yankee Stadium. Great atmosphere. Bit of controversy. Ted Uncle, the referee, gave a couple of red cards to NYC, and what I found that was very interesting, being just there as an enjoyer of football and wanting to go to a game while I'm in New York. We were fortunate in the press area; we had monitors, so we could see the Fox Sports 1 coverage with the kind of subtitles and the closed captioning as well. But at the stadium, there was no indication, or it didn't appear overly obvious to the supporters in the stadium, that the referee had been called upon to take another look at a challenge on Bradley Wright Phillips, which ultimately I still think was the wrong decision to give a red card to the NYCFC defender. But there was very little communication in the stadium, which can't be very easy for NYCFC or any of the teams in MLS who are not playing in a soccer-specific stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point too, because I mean, I've been to matches before where I felt that actually if I was at home watching it on television, I'd have a better idea of what's going on in terms of whether it was a foul or an incident. And at home watching it and seeing the replays from the different angles and going, okay, yeah, that definitely was a penalty, or that definitely should have been a red card, or maybe not on closer inspection. And for the fan in the stadium, I mean, they're on the same page as the referee. They just see it in real time, and that's it. And then the emotions come from that, whether you think it's a penalty or a red card or not. But it's you would think. Well, I guess with a baseball stadium, it's difficult. But as stadiums become more modern in terms of the technology, if there's ways to kind of try to get the TV experience as much kind of relating to the fan experience, where the fans can see on the big screens and the replays and this and that, I think that'll make it a better atmosphere for the fans, and probably less chance of riots.
Yeah, and from a TV perspective, Chris, as well, where the camera is, it's a kind of low-down camera at Yankee Stadium, and what it does, the TV arc actually looks really good, because there are some clubs that sell tickets where the camera is, and it looks ridiculous on TV. It looks like there's nobody there. But the whole, pretty much the whole bottom bowl at Yankee Stadium was full. And it looked really good on TV, because obviously watching it again on the monitors. I think they've done a really good job in a tough situation to make that fan experience at Yankee Stadium for the football fans something that they can enjoy.
So some of the matches I watched this past week, Real Betis against Levante. I didn't watch the whole match, but I did see the incredible goal by Levante's 31-year-old Jose Luis Morales, which was, to me, goal of the season and one of the best goals I've seen in so far since August 2018. So absolutely incredible goal. If you missed it, if you get a chance, go back and watch it. It was, I think he beat like four or five players on his way to score in that one. I did catch a little bit of the Verona-Juventus game we mentioned earlier.
Kievo, yeah.
Yeah, Kievo, exactly. And I watched the first 30 minutes of that before I switched over to Chelsea-Arsenal, which was an entertaining game. Nothing remarkable in terms of the coverage of it. It was fine. Man City, Huddersfield, Brighton, Man United, Real Madrid against Getafe. Got a lot of football in this past weekend. Also watched ESPN FC. I think it was on Saturday night for their analysis, as well as The Extra, the weekend edition on beIN Sports. And I particularly enjoyed watching, it was Gary Bailey and Thomas Rongen in their Coach's Corner segment, where they kind of go into a lot of deep dive analysis of Gareth Bale's goal and assist for Real Madrid.
I'd love to say, yeah, I saw that too. But as a Comcast customer in Connecticut, first of all, when we actually had beIN Sports, we didn't have it in HD. We had it in SD. That was frustrating enough. But now, having listened to your podcast on a weekly basis and listening to the chat of you and Kartik as well, some interesting comments from Comcast recently. But still, I just want to watch my football. And as you know, there's many ways that we can now find the football. But being a football fan, being a TV enthusiast, we want the easiest way. That is to switch to beIN Sport on Comcast, and then you find out there's still no deal with Comcast. So it's frustrating from that perspective. And Comcast have not covered themselves in glory with regards to beIN over the years, because I still haven't seen it in HD in my home.
Yeah, and for listeners who are interested or want to know the latest on that, I haven't heard anything new. It looks like there's no resolution in the coming, so this could drag on for weeks, unfortunately. But hopefully the powers that be at beIN Sports and Comcast are having discussions, and hopefully they can figure out a way to get beIN Sports back on Comcast, because that's massive numbers in terms of the reach that Comcast Xfinity has. And last but not least, Mark, my match of the week, the one, and I'm trying to be unbiased on this one, but the match of the week for me was Swansea City against Leeds United. I watched on ESPN Plus on Tuesday. One of my favourite players at Swansea, Ollie McBurney, who plays for Scotland. I mean, he's from Leeds, but Scottish roots, and a fantastic match, just end-to-end action. Not just the match was incredible, but just the production levels for the championship on ESPN Plus, are spectacular. I mean, to me, it pulls you in. It's almost Premier League quality, and it was a sensational match.
And Ollie McBurney, I remember going as a fan to the Azteca in May to watch Scotland against Mexico.
Yeah,
and poor Ollie McBurney, because just having spoken to him afterwards and just seeing the joy in his face playing for Scotland, but he was a lone striker with the nearest Scotland player in the first half about 30 yards from him, chasing shadows in 90% kind of humidity in altitude he's never played at before. But you know what? He said there was nowhere he would rather be. So just to hear stories like that, and whether or not that's his level, if it is, then, I mean, he was on loan at Barnsley, I know that. He's back at Swansea now, and he's getting an opportunity. It's a great story. Just finally, by the way, my match of the week, totally biased. I know you're trying to portray the kind of neutrality. Totally biased. My match of the week, just for the sheer, not historic nature of it, but for our first game on an ESPN domestic channel,
I was told a few days beforehand who I was working with. I'd never worked with Matteo Bonetti before. I'd heard stories. I'd seen him on BN Sports. I thought he was excellent. But just a word of praise for Matteo. Kay Murray's husband at BN Sports. Obviously, I know Kay as well. And he was billed, and he lived up to that as well. What a really knowledgeable guy Matteo Bonetti is, and yep. Hopefully we'll do many more games together. Because when you're put together with someone, you try and do your best. You don't know how it's going to go, but he made it very easy for me, and hopefully the listeners enjoyed watching him, or sorry, the viewers enjoyed listening to Matteo's coverage.
Yep, and that was Torino against AS Roma in the first match of on television, the game of the week from ESPN on ESPN News on that one. And again, this weekend is going to be Juventus against Lazio on ESPN2. So, Mark, let's move on to TV streaming news, and yeah. I'll have you kick it off on this one.
Yeah, well, you mentioned right at the start, Chris, about the Scottish football rights. This is an interesting one. So for fans of Scottish football, there's been issues with the rights for overseas TV coverage of Scottish football. So the SPFL are now taking steps to sell the overseas broadcasting rights from this season onwards. There was a deal in place. However, the 10-season deal with MP and Silva is being ripped up. It's being terminated because they're having a few financial issues and defaulting on a number of payments that were due to the SPFL and to other leagues around the world, by the way. Here's a quote from the SPFL chief executive, Neil Doncaster, regarding this. He said, "We're working to ensure that fans across the globe are ready to enjoy matches from the Ladbrokes SPFL, the Betfred Cup and the Ironbrew Cup as normal this season. This allows us to explore opportunities to give even more fans worldwide the chance to watch our games." So that's the quote from Neil Doncaster. And so plans are being put in place for the international broadcasters who've agreed to show live fixtures over the coming weeks to receive the signal as usual. Of course, we've got the Celtic Rangers game on the Old Firm clash coming up at the start of September. So Bleacher Report Live are going to continue to stream games until a final decision is reached by the SPFL. So it does mean, Chris, that the Scottish Premiership rights could end up moving to a different broadcaster over here in the US, or they could stay where they are, depending on how negotiations go between Bleacher Report Live and the SPFL. It's just a shambles with MP and Silva, and we await to find out what's going on. It had to be this season, didn't it, when we've got Brendan Rodgers, Steven Gerrard. We may have a title race, and then we've got all these issues with the TV rights. So hopefully something is in the pipeline and can be announced shortly.
Yeah, definitely a big mess there too. So, I mean, hopefully it'll stick with Bleacher Report Live just to make it easier for fans of Scottish football. They've been watching the season there and have probably subscribed to Bleacher Report Live in order to watch Scottish football. But, you know, you never know. It could move to DAZN, who's supposed to be launching in September. There's other services out there too. I mean, it could be ESPN Plus. Who knows? There's many places it could go. It'd be interesting to see how much of a demand there is for those rights, and if there is any type of back and forth on negotiations between a couple of companies to try and get those rights. But I guess we'll have to wait and see on that one. But anyway, a heads up that Bleacher Report Live will continue streaming until a decision has been made, and then we'll see where it goes or if it stays. Now, speaking of streaming, Fubo TV has added Turner Sports channels to their streaming service. They now have TNT, which means that they have the English language rights and the Spanish language rights to the competition. The English language would be, most of those games are on TNT. The Spanish language games are going to be on across all the Univision channels, from Univision, Univision Deportes, Galavision, Unimas, etc. So now, with the acquisition of the TNT and all of the other Turner channels, such as TBS and True TV, etc., it means that Fubo has the most comprehensive offering of soccer-related channels available on streaming services in the US. What it doesn't include, though, however, which is the same for Sling TV and YouTube TV and PlayStation View and DirecTV Now and the long list of streaming companies, what it doesn't have is access to Bleacher Report Live. And Bleacher Report Live, you can only get through Bleacher Report Live, and that would give you access to every single Champions League game and every single Europa League game. So depending on how much Champions League football you watch or Europa League will probably determine which streaming service or cable or satellite service you would want to get. But anyway, for Fubo TV subscribers, that's great news.
Yeah, I mean, the theme seems to be as the kind of months and years go on, we're moving to streaming services. But there's still free-to-air content, and there's still Univision Deportes doing content. And here's some news for you as well, that for the 2018-19 season, Univision Deportes will debut Bundesgol, a one-hour show on Friday nights created exclusively for the Bundesliga. This is going to feature Ramses Sandoval, Xavier Sol and Lucia Villalon previewing the coming weekend's action. So that show is going to air at 5 p.m. Eastern on UDN starting on August 24th. Looking forward to that one.
So speaking of soccer rights and broadcasts and programming, in related news, I'm hearing that the rights to the International Champions Cup are now up for bidding after the deal with ESPN came to a close after the tournament ended a few weeks ago. My source tells me that Relevant Sports is expecting a sharp increase in the value of the rights, and they're anticipating a bidding war between all of the major players in the States to acquire the rights to the tournament, which has continued to become more prestigious year after year. Now, that's probably what Relevant Sports is thinking in terms of seeing that increase. Whether or not that happens in terms of the competition, because the summer is often a very busy time of the year for soccer broadcasting, whether it's Women's World Cup, Copa America, lots of other friendly tournaments too, and Major League Soccer, and Liga MX. It'll be interesting to see how many would be interested in ICC and whether they'll actually get more money for those rights than previously.
Maybe this... they will argue, and you're right, they will argue that this is a good time to renegotiate because it's certainly been a success, the International Champions Cup. There's no doubt about that. However, if I'm negotiating with Relevant Sports on behalf of a TV network, I would point to the fact and say, well, look, you had a game that was going to be scheduled for the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. That ended up being played at StubHub because of poor ticket sales. And the only reason for that, and this is where they were unfortunate, it was a World Cup year as well. So I think this is a really interesting one. So for me, Chris, I think both parties come into it, whoever the other party is negotiating, or all parties with Relevant Sports, I think they all come into it from a position of strength. For Relevant Sports, just simply look and say, the ICC has been a tremendous success since it was launched. Charlie Stilettano and the guys have done a phenomenal job at getting all the best teams in the world over. But if I'm negotiating with them and trying to knock the price down, I'm going to say, well, you might be bringing the best teams over, but you didn't bring the best players over, to which they would then respond, well, it was a World Cup year. So I'd love to be a fly in the wall for those negotiations, because there will be a deal struck, and it'll be a good one, and I'm sure it'll be a lucrative one for Relevant Sports as well. But again, if I'm negotiating with Relevant Sports, there would be some caveats in there as to say why the deal maybe shouldn't be to the same financial value as Relevant Sports are expecting.
Yeah, one more thing on that too is that Relevant Sports is going to be managing the rights sale process for La Liga in North America too. So as of probably 2019, 2020, around then, that process will begin for the rights for 2020 to 21 onwards. So it could be an opportunity for a broadcaster to kind of get in early with Relevant Sports and start developing a really good relationship and possibly get an ICC, and then using that relationship to then possibly get La Liga. But interesting things to keep an eye out for. I'm sure we won't hear anything about ICC probably until next year, but the process has begun, at least the initial discussions and I guess objectives in terms of trying to increase that value. Okay, moving on to TV ratings. We had some interesting numbers from this past week. Just a few to throw out there. The Arsenal-Chelsea game had the highest number of viewers so far for the Premier League in the United States for this season. 1.1 million people tuned in on NBC and Universo to watch an entertaining game. Lots of defensive mistakes, but lots of goals in that match. The UEFA Super Cup, so this was the Real Madrid-Atleti game that was shown both on Univision and Univision Deportes on the Spanish side, as well as TNT on the English side. On this one, the Spanish side had 698,000 viewers, and then on the TNT, 173,000 viewers. So part of this can definitely, you can look at and say, okay, well, Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, it's a Spanish derby, a Real Madrid derby. It's going to be probably more of an interest to Spanish speakers than, say, your Man United, Chelsea fans who used to kind of more English language broadcast. But still, that's quite a big difference between 700,000 for Univision to 173,000 for TNT. And then some of the other numbers that's jumped out too, we had, let me see what else is there. We had Real Salt Lake against LAFC on ESPN2. 119,000 viewers on that one. Not a good number there. Question mark for the Torino AS Roma game. Do you know if ESPN News if they're rated by Nielsen? I didn't see the number on this one.
I'm not sure. There's an account I follow on Twitter, sports TV ratings.
Yep.
And they used to. I'm not sure they still do it on a weekly basis, but I do remember a tweet going back. Because I was always interested in what FC did as far as viewership is concerned. And when it moved to ESPN News from ESPN2, I'm sure I remember a tweet saying that they don't have figures available for ESPN News. It's just ESPN and ESPN2 that they count. There may well be, and if anybody knows, then it'd be good to hear. But I don't believe the ESPN News, it's certainly hard for us to find out at work if something's been on ESPN News, what it did. We've got our own individual monitors and we can tell roughly that way. But as far as the kind of Nielsen is concerned, I'm not sure they do ESPN News.
All right, so let's move on to listener mailbag. First up is from Bill Payne. He says, fascinating discussion about the implications of La Liga playing a regular season match in the US. I could definitely see the USSF just blocking it entirely, or, and I'm reticent to say this loudly, Bill says, at the behest of MLS/some, forcing the two visiting La Liga teams to play a friendly against a MLS team. Intrigued on how all this will unfold, and I'm sure you guys will keep us informed as things develop. Well, the latest news on that is that a lot of the captains for La Liga teams and a lot of the players are threatening to strike if this happens. And also, I think ESPN reported, I think it was Jeff Carlisle reported, that not only would USSF have to sanction this, but you also have FIFA that would have to sanction it and UEFA and the Spanish Football Federation. So there's a lot of hoops and hurdles to jump through to even make this match possible. What's your take on this so far, Mark? I mean, do you think this is going to happen?
I think it's very interesting, and I don't think you go public and announce such a deal. This isn't a 1 or 2 year deal. This is a 15-year deal. I don't think you go public unless you've got a fair idea that this is going to go ahead. Now, I'm sure the contract will contain many clauses. I thought it was really interesting listening to your podcast a week or two ago when it was brought up, either by yourself or Kartik, about the USSF having the final say and whether a sweetener might need to be involved. I don't think you come this far down the road without having already asked various questions of the organizations that are required. It's interesting because if you're going to kind of grow the game, your discussion about how would it maybe impact and affect MLS if you've got four games that are taking place that weekend, one of which, say example, it's in Miami, one of which is the Spanish game, then you don't want to get to the stage where people are picking and choosing what they go to, because there's a chance, if it is a Real Madrid in town, that people would rather go to that if they're playing like a Getafe or a Levante or whoever. One of the interesting things about this is it's got a lot of discussion in the British press about, is this something that the Premier League may reconsider? Remember the 39th game. But let me kind of hold the horses here, because this is a league, the Premier League, that turned down a title sponsor because they didn't need the money. So I think the chances of a league game being played outside England, I'm not saying in our lifetime, I'm certainly saying in the kind of short to medium term, is minuscule indeed. But where are we? This is an interesting point, I think. What are you going to take, and how can you take a game abroad, in addition to the ICC, which sees a lot of the English clubs play over here in the United States? Why not play something like the Community Shield? Take it away from Wembley. It is a bit of a glorified pre-season friendly, but as we saw this year, it was taken seriously. And just look at the Trophée des Champions in France. PSG went to China to face Monaco. I think they played in Shenzhen. So that is something, and the Italians have certainly thought about it in the past as well. I think the only chance you're likely to see a semi-competitive English game being played on these shores is something like the Community Shield. And as far as the Spanish is concerned, there was, as Bill said in the listener mailbag, there was one word that he used, intrigued. And I think that's the perfect word. This is one to watch. But I don't think you announce what Relevant Sports announced if you're not confident and you don't have at least a few jigsaw pieces in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And it might be, too, that Javier Tebas, who's the head of La Liga, and one of the clubs, or maybe two of the clubs, had said, OK, let's go for this. And we'll figure out the rest later, perhaps. But you'd imagine that there'd be a lot of buy-in and a lot of, basically kind of agreements in place. Or at least, let's move forward with this before announcing it. But this is definitely going to drag on for quite a bit. So it will be intriguing to watch this one unfold. Next up is Rob Keith, and Rob says, I have a gripe about NBC Sports Gold. I subscribed to the service last season but didn't sign up until late September because that was the first time the team I follow wasn't on NBCSN. I figured that my subscription would run for 12 months because that's how every other streaming service operates, so I was surprised when it was cut off in July. I'm sure it was in the fine print somewhere that it didn't run for 12 months, but it left me a little bit bitter. As a consequence, I won't be subscribing to the service this season. And let me just chime in there too. That's actually a good point, and it's something that I haven't heard about before in regards to, it was definitely a season pass, but I'm sure other listeners out there probably ran into the same thing too. Rob goes on to say, I also had a comment on how NBCSN will only show one match during the 10 a.m. Eastern Time window. If the match on TV turns out to be a dud, do you think this could push soccer fans to other leagues? With all of the new content available through ESPN Plus, as well as the Bundesliga playing the majority of their matches on Saturdays during the same window, we have more options than ever. It seems to me that if you really want to drive people to subscribe to the service, they should put more of the top six matches, move more of the top six matches to streaming. Interested to hear your thoughts, and as always, thanks for the work you guys put in. What's your thoughts on this one, Mark?
If you have something and it's taken away, you probably long for it even more. If you don't have something and it's given to you, you're unaware of having everything to begin with. Now, the reason I kind of use that analogy is at the start, when NBC had the rights, as we're in the United States, it was just Christmas time every single weekend. Every single game was available either on TV, of which there were the more than the one option at 10 o'clock, or online. All the games were available to the viewer. So you get used to something, then it gets taken away and you're longing for it back because you've had it and you don't have it any longer. If they had started, which it wasn't in place at the time, the whole NBC Sports Gold, if they'd started at the beginning by saying, here's three games for you and the rest are subscription only, that would have been seen to have been the norm. So because we've had it and it's been taken away, we are a little more short-tempered when it comes to issues. That's what I would say to that.
Yeah, what's interesting with this one is that this season so far, which is it's early for the Premier League so far, but we've in that 10 o'clock window in previous seasons, as well as last season, most recently, we had one of those matches, those 10 o'clock window matches on CNBC. So you'd have like Spurs against Fulham, for example, at 10 o'clock on NBCSN, and then you'd have another match in that same window on CNBC. So far this season, it's been one match on NBCSN, everything else on NBC Sports Gold. So that'll be interesting to see how things go progress through the season. It does force you to make a decision. If you do want to watch, whether it's Everton against Leicester or whoever it may be, you want to watch one of those other matches, do you subscribe to NBC Sports Gold or do you switch? And do you switch and turn the channel and watch the Bundesliga or La Liga? And for me personally, I don't have NBC Sports Gold this season so far. But for me personally, I've been switching a lot more. So I've been flipping the channel and going to watch a La Liga match or a Bundesliga, this weekend, Bundesliga match, more than I've ever done in the past. But I still crave that Premier League match that I'm missing. So I guess it's different for everyone, but it is an interesting strategy from NBC on that one. Next up is David Roberts, and he says, okay, just listen to your take on beIN Sports not going over the top. I don't disagree with you. I'm curious if a lawsuit can be made about cable companies owning its own channels, Comcast and NBC, and if it can be tied into the Paramount decision keeping movie studios from owning movie theaters. And I'm by far, I'm not a legal expert by any means. I don't know on that one, but you could argue, yeah, that it's the relationship is very close. I mean, you got Comcast that owns NBC Universal that has the exclusive rights to the Premier League, and then beIN Sports on the other side saying, okay, well, by Comcast not doing a deal with beIN Sports, that hurts beIN Sports. I mean, it takes them off the number one cable provider in the country, and as a consequence, that hurts La Liga, which is in direct opposition to the Premier League, and La Liga wants to overthrow the Premier League, not just in America, but worldwide. So whether a lawsuit can be made out of it, I'm not sure, but it is interesting. Next up is Jose Rodriguez. He says, hey guys, this last episode about beIN Sports having very little hope in surviving in the future is disappointing, for I feel as though their programs such as The Extra and The Locker Room are on par with ESPN FC. However, if this does happen, there would be lots of talent for other companies to poach on. So my question is, where do you see the likes of Phil Shane and Ray Hudson going? Can you see Major League Soccer wanting them for Fox or ESPN? Maybe Phil and Ray could do all of the Southeastern matches. They do usually call matches off monitors, so maybe Fox with the Bundesliga. And he goes on and on and on. Which is interesting, too, because like both Ray Hudson and Phil Shane used to do Major League Soccer broadcasts. Phil Shane commentated the very first Major League Soccer game in the history of the league. Ray Hudson was doing a lot of co-commentary before he moved to beIN Sports. But I don't see beIN Sports going away anytime soon. I mean, definitely their future is cloudy, but a lot of it depends on what happens with this Comcast deal. If they can secure the Comcast deal and then figure out a way to renew the La Liga rights, which is going to be a tough ask, but if they can do it, then they will be fine. But I guess this is another one of those we'll have to wait and see on that. Tim Keane says, since I grew up many years ago in England, I grew up thinking that the FA Cup was a great, important competition. However, over the years, for many reasons, one beIN the terrible coverage on Fox with a large number of games on channels nobody gets, the competition has lost a lot of importance, and moving to ESPN Plus will only accelerate that. Yes, $5 a month is not a lot, but I'm not interested in most of the stuff they show. $50 a season for the Premier League is better value, and generally better games, as many FA Cup games are just boring and one-sided. And in many respects, who wants to see the Premier League reserve teams? Terrible decision by the FA. Now, I would say, Mark, on this one, that if you're talking about value, and you're talking about $50 a season for NBC Sports Gold, well, with ESPN FC, you can sign up for $50 a season, the special deal that they have, and with that you get what? You get the championship, you get Serie A, you get the League Cup, you get the DFB Pokal, you get the Eredivisie, the list of actual leagues and competitions that ESPN Plus has, I would say at the end of the day is actually better value than NBC Sports Gold.
Yeah, I mean, you're asking a company man to comment on something like this. This is one of these things that we've obviously got Serie A with every game on ESPN Plus, the FA Cup deal, it's similar in a way to NBC Sports Gold in that you're not going to give everything away for nothing. I mean, ESPN paid for the rights for the FA Cup along with Serie A. NBC paid fortunes for the Premier League. You are trying to recoup some of that money back, but you can't just say to people and to sports fans out there, well, just subscribe to our service. You need to give them something. And I honestly think what ESPN Plus provides, you're a Swansea fan. You can watch your team most weeks on ESPN Plus. So the bottom line is we live in a fickle world where people are always going to complain about certain things. And as I said earlier, with regards to NBC's coverage to begin with, where we got everything for free, when you've had something for free and then you're asked to pay for something, of course you're going to be reticent to do so. So it's up to the provider to provide something that will say, you know what, $4.95 or $4.99 a month, that's actually a pretty good deal. I can deal with that. I think the pricing structure has been done well for ESPN Plus. Mm-hmm. But just because you've got a good pricing structure, you still need to have good content on it. And it's an interesting one. I get this because if you know that you're going to get the FA Cup semifinals and final on ESPN or ESPN2, then there's a fair chance you'll be like, you know what, I probably won't bother with ESPN Plus because I'll find a way of watching it, and in the end I can watch it on ESPN or ESPN2 when it gets to the final stages. What they're doing here is they're saying to people, look, if you want to see this competition, you want to watch your team in it, know you've had it for free to air, but they've got to do something to try and give exclusivity to a product on a platform. And this is what they're doing. It's not to everybody's taste. I get that. But you can satisfy some of the people some of the time. You'll never satisfy all the people all the time.
Yeah, and actually with the FA Cup, I could argue that with it being now the home on ESPN Plus, is that it's actually going to be easier to go ahead and watch those matches, because with Fox, the games were across Fox, FS1, FS2, Fox Soccer Match Pass, and Fox Soccer Plus. And the Fox Soccer Plus was what, like, I think $20 a month subscription. Fox Soccer Match Pass was also $20 a month. And then those are the Fox channels that you would get through your TV provider or perhaps through your streaming service. So the price isn't the issue. The accessibility I can get, if somebody doesn't have a streaming device or doesn't have a good internet and they just like watching matches on television, that I can see. But to me, this is actually... it's a good move. It's a good move for the FA. It's a good move for ESPN Plus in acquiring those rights. And we'll have to wait and see. It's going to be an adjustment. It's going to be a change. But I think at the end of the day, I think everyone will be happier. And actually, if anything, we might get more games through ESPN Plus than we did through Fox. I think ESPN Plus will have about 73 games. So actually, we might have more matches overall compared to Fox, where not every single match that was available to them was actually shown.
Yeah, and there's also a letter that, or an email you've received, Chris, from Anthony Bell, just on this same topic. So he basically says, hi, guys, I'd like to comment on the FA Cup going to ESPN+. It was said on the podcast that converting casual fans is the key. How can you convert casual fans if you're not showing games to casual fans? And Anthony goes on, the point I kind of want to make with this is all in its infancy. The NBC Sports Gold from last season, that was its first year. The beIN Sports Connect, it's kind of add-ons to what you already get. I think if we fast forward five years into the future, and it might not even be that much, what we're going to do is we're basically, as a viewer, we're going to create a jigsaw puzzle, but it's going to be totally tailor-made to what we want to watch. And we'll probably end up paying less than we do for the actual bundle itself. So right now, because it's in its infancy, it's kind of seen as, well, why am I going to have to pay for something that I didn't have before? And there's mumps and moans and gripes. I get all that. But I think this will be de rigueur in probably less than 5 years. And what you'll have is each individual girl, boy, man, woman, whatever, will be able to tailor make their own package so they can see whatever they want to see, and they don't have to subscribe to what they don't want to see. And ESPN Plus, hopefully, just like NBC Sports Gold and the Fox app and everything like that, that will be just as much a part of watching TV, whether it's streaming, as it would be watching Fox or watching NBCSN or watching ESPN.
So the last comment from one of the listeners is from Toby Schumacher, and Toby says, any thoughts on Liam McHugh getting a Sunday Night Football job? I had finally grown to like him as a fill-in for Rebecca Lowe on Mondays on NBCSN. I can't imagine he will do both, both on-site Sunday, then Premier League on Monday. Will we see someone new in the midweek host's chair? So to answer your question, Toby, I don't know the answer to that. It's a great point. It's possible that Rebecca might stay over another day and fill in there, or within NBC Sports, perhaps they have some other talent available to them. Derek Ray could be acquired, I'm sure, probably if he's available on a freelance basis to fill in. But it will be interesting to see kind of who takes that Monday spot in the host chair.
I have to say, Chris, I really, really rate Liam McHugh as a host. He's very versatile. We've seen him do the Olympics and many other things that NBC has. Very, very versatile. And he looks to me like he's a natural. And he's for me, I know that Toby said, I've finally grown to like him as a fill-in for Rebecca. I think he's been absolutely seamless. I think he's a big, big talent.
Yeah, I noticed that too on the Crystal Palace-Liverpool match on Monday, is that his questions are good. His questions to the analysts are good. How much of that is not scripted, but thought out beforehand in terms of, you know, figuring out what questions to ask the two Robbies? Regardless, he does a really, really good job of asking pointed questions to get the best out of his analyst. And I like Toby too. I think in the beginning, I didn't really know much about Liam. I think Kartik knew more about him from other sports, but I've grown to like him, and I think he's been a great Monday. And actually, when he subbed in too for Rebecca, even on other match days, or if she's been out sick, he's been fantastic. So it will be interesting to see what's happening there. Now, for listeners, you can always reach us through email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. So if you have any questions, need some advice, want to give your opinions, you disagree with us, or want to shine some light on some soccer coverage that you've been watching that you think is pretty interesting. Which reminds me, actually, I think last episode or the episode before, I talked about Netflix and a fantastic documentary series there. And I got the name wrong. I think I called it The Masters. It was actually called The Mavericks. And I highly recommend it. It's got Rodney Marsh. I think George Best is on there. Charlie George. A lot of the greats of mostly, you know, British football. But European football, and I think Johan Cruyff is on there too. I mean, so world football, but highly recommended for one of those nights that you don't have any games on and you just want to watch something of interest. Fantastic stuff. So Mark, before we go, anything we should look out for in addition to Serie A? Anything on the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I'm down in New York right now, so I've got a couple of days filming down here, then heading back to do finish up the prep and then do Juventus against Lazio Saturday, back down here to do the tennis. So depending on the hours I'm working, you were speaking about Netflix there. I've got about 3 episodes left of All or Nothing, the Manchester City thing to watch. So that will certainly be consuming some of my time. And I'll be honest, Chris, what I didn't realise, I knew they did All or Nothing with NFL teams as well, but there's also an All or Nothing that Amazon Prime have done with the All Blacks.
Oh, really?
Five or 6 episodes. I'm a big rugby guy myself. Used to play it when I was younger. Love my rugby. So that will keep the kind of nights after we've come home from the tennis, and you know what it's like when you've been at a game late, a night game, yep, or you've commentated on it. The adrenaline is pumping, so you don't get to sleep easy. You need something just to kind of ease you down a little bit. So All or Nothing, I'll finish the Manchester, which I think so far has been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if Sergio Aguero needs someone to watch a horror movie with him on his own, on his big 20 million mansion pad, whatever it is, and his big, huge cinema screen, I'm sure there's not going to be a shortage of people that would do that. But it's been brilliant. It's really, really well produced. And the Amazon guys have done a wonderful job with All or Nothing Manchester City.
Yeah, yeah, I have to catch that. I haven't watched it yet, but yeah, that one's on Amazon Prime, so definitely check it out. So thank you everyone for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. So heading into this weekend, we've got the Bundesliga starting up, we've got the Premier League, Major League Soccer, the Championship, USL games, I'm sure, and a whole bunch of other matches from around the world that you can watch. Mark, what should they do?
Well, Kartik's not here, so I'll say on his behalf, enjoy your football.